This is the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. I'm Ann Clark, a member of the Commonwealth Club and chair of the Environment and Natural Resources member-led forum. Our program tonight is a holiday toast to the 2016 California wine harvest with Lucas Pope, Halter Ranch Vineyards, Neil Collins, Tablas Creek Vineyards, Julian Chereau, Jackson Family Wines, and our moderator, Allison Jordan from the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. And we'll turn the program over now to Allison.
Thank you so much, Anne. It's great to be with you all tonight. I thought I would start off with something that I overheard while we were preparing with a little bit of a sound check from one of our panelists to give you a sense of what you have in store for this evening. And it was looking at a cell phone, getting really excited, saying, "Yes, we got our compost pile cooking." Not what you typically hear when someone's staring at their cell phone. So we're so happy to be with you here tonight, especially as we're getting close to the holidays. Our harvest is complete. It's been a great harvest, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And we also wanted to share some on-the-ground examples of how California wine grape growers and vintners are really embracing environmental and social responsibility as they're making fantastic quality wines. And really all of the vineyard practices and winery practices that go on year in, day in, day out throughout the year. So I'm Allison Jordan. I'm the Executive Director of the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance, and I've had the honor of working with this program really since its inception about 14 years ago, and really having a chance to see and meet the people behind the practices, and that's really what's so impressive, and I think you'll get a flavor of that tonight. So I'm guessing a few of you are here, and I overheard this as well, because you enjoy our product. How many are in that camp? and I'm sure that in addition to wanting to know the vintage, the varietal, the vineyard source, all of those things that you love about wine, it's also really interesting to hear how wine grapes are grown and how wine is made. And here we are in California, where a vast majority of the California vintners and growers are embracing sustainable practices. That's how they're making your wine. And so we'll hear more about some of the practices that are being used. Managing for the long term really makes sense because this is still largely a family-owned and operated industry, as you'll hear again some of the examples this evening. So managing for the long term, for passing on a vibrant business to your next generation, really makes a great deal of sense. And even as you go out and visit California vineyards and wineries, I think you really get a sense of the commitment to environmental stewardship and community stewardship. So we're incredibly lucky to have this fantastic panel here with us tonight, and I just wanted to take a moment to introduce each of them. It's worth noting that all of the wineries that they represent are recipients of the 2016 California Green Medal Sustainable Wine Growing Leadership Awards. We say Green Medal for short. So first up is Julian Chereau. He's the Director of Sustainability at Jackson Family Wines, and they are this year's Green Medal Leader Award winner, which is basically given to the vineyard or winery that best exemplifies all three aspects of sustainability: environmental stewardship, being also environmentally friendly, socially responsible, and economically viable. So really those three E's that we talk about, they really illustrate it in so many different ways. He's a Sonoma native, and he's worked in the wine industry for about 10 years. And in his current role, he focuses on Jackson Family Wine strategy as well as the tactical implementation of every aspect of sustainability, from water and energy efficiency to on-site renewable energy generation, greenhouse gas emissions, you name it. Sustainability is a big, broad term, and he covers it all. He's an MBA in sustainable management from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco. I think one of the early graduates of that program. Next up, we have Lucas Pope, who is a vineyard manager for Halter Ranch Vineyard. And although he was born in California and returned to go to Cal Poly, he was raised in Germany and Japan, so we have a little bit of an international perspective. He's worked for harvests in a number of different wine regions throughout the world, so perhaps some of the questions could be about some of those observations. Halter Ranch was the 2016 Green Medal recipient of the Environment Award, so demonstrating their environmental stewardship. And really also they do, again, all of these organizations you'll hear do so much in the environmental, social, and economic aspects of sustainability. And then last but not least, we have Neil Collins, who is winemaker and vineyard manager for Tablas Creek, and he oversees both their organic vineyard and winery. And he's originally from England, trained as a chef. I learned about him today. And you'll get to taste some of his great artistry, maybe not the food, but the wine that he makes, along with some of Jackson Family Wines and Halter Ranch wines, if you're able to stay after the program. So well-recognized for their many contributions to the Paso Robles wine community, as well as to the community as a whole, Tablas Creek received the 2016 Green Medal for the Community Award, and really for their many contributions of being a good neighbor, as well as a good employer. So thank you all for being here. And I wanted to just kick things off. We are here celebrating the 2016 harvest, so I would love to hear how it went this year for you all. So Julian, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Great. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to talk specifically about the harvest on the North Coast. We have vineyards throughout the coast of California, but these gentlemen are a lot more versed on the central and south coast to speak to that. So I'll speak briefly about the North Coast. And from our perspective, it was a very, very good year. The quality was very high. It was a very balanced year. So we got the rain that we needed at the beginning of the year, which is always important. We grow most of our grapes on hillsides and mountains, and those soils, they drain a lot better than valley floor grapes do. So it's really important to kind of space your water out. And so this year we got just the right amount of water at the right times, which really helped with quality, make the grapes struggle a little bit, which is always good to make things build their character, as it were. And throughout the rest of the year, it was a really a good growing season. The word that I get from our winemakers was really balanced. The wines this year are going to present with a really good balance of acidity and tannins, and everybody's really excited about the harvest this year.
Great. And Lucas, what did you observe in your experience?
2016 was a interesting year on the Central Coast. We had late spring rains, which caused a little bit more weed growth, but it also supplied plenty of water for the vines, so we used less irrigation than usual. We also had a phenomenon of a fire relatively close to both of us. Tablas Creek and Halter Ranch share a border. We have a road between us. We saw more stress late in the season, which causes more concentrated flavors in most of our Cabernet grapes. And overall, the yield was good, not quite average, but much better than the 2015 yield, which was an exceptionally low-yielding year.
Well, being that we're right across the street, it doesn't vary much from that story. The smoke we were really concerned was going to cause damage. You guys may have seen that. The chimney fire is what Lucas was talking about, and it was pretty intense for a few days. But we didn't see a lot of smoke taint or any smoke taint, though Lucas was telling me earlier that he had some reading of UV being down, right, by considerably during that time. We had a little bit more rain than we've had in a couple of years, which is still not even close to what we're used to. I think at Tablas Creek we got about 17.5 inches. We're used to 25 to 30 in those good old days about 5 years ago. We didn't suffer any frost for about the third year, which is a great thing in the springtime for sure. But I think it also has an impact. There's a lot more insect activity within the vineyards due to that, I think, because they're overwintering better. So in general, it was a really nice year. The early crop for us was really good and very balanced. Varies a lot because even though we're only 120 acres, each block is a different hillside and a different exposure. So the later stuff struggled, as Lucas said, same thing. It was a hard end to the year, which was impacted by the weather and the insect pressure a little bit. But in general, I would say we got an average crop of really nice quality.
Great. Well, we look forward to trying not this year's vintage tonight, but your other vintages.
That would be early.
Very early. So the concept of sustainable wine growing can be quite complex to explain. It involves every aspect of growing grapes and making wine, so soil management, air and water quality, energy and water use efficiency, the social aspects, how you treat your neighbors and employees. There's so much to it. And in our code of sustainable wine growing, we cover 200 plus practices, very complex to try to communicate. So I'm going to ask each of our panelists to give their elevator speech of how they define sustainable wine growing. And just to mix it up, I'll start with Lucas.
It's funny because my wife posed this question to me earlier tonight, and really the gist of the whole program is to have a viable business and viable grapes, not for our owner, not for our owner's kids, but for their grandchildren. We want the vineyards to be there, what I'm putting in the ground now, to be there in 30 or 40 years, producing outstanding wines and retain employees and educate people and try and spread the word of sustainability so that more people will have environmentally friendly practices and be able to adopt a lot of the practices that you're going to hear about tonight, because I think we all have very similar practices.
Great. And Julian, I'll ask you to go next.
I would echo that. From our perspective, we're also a family-owned wine company, and our focus is really on making the highest quality wines in the most responsible manner. And our founder, when he started Jackson Family Wines 30-odd years ago, his focus was the same, that he was envisioning his grandchildren and future generations inheriting the business. I'm fortunate enough to work for the second generation of Jackson family members who are now taking over the business. And, you know, the family mentality really extends to the extended family as well, with employees and the communities in which we do business. So it's very much a focus on, leaving everything just a little bit better than we found it for future generations.
That's nice. Neil?
The same sort of story, really. Tablas Creek is owned by two families. One is the Perrin family from France, Chateau Neuf de Pape, the owners of Chateau de Boxtel. The other being the Haas family, Robert Haas being the founder of Tablas Creek and previously of Vineyard Brands. Those two families are into their third generation of partnership at this point. Bob Haas started importing Chateau de Boxtel wines in the mid to late 60s. And now all seven of the children of the Perrin brothers are into the business. Six boys and one girl. They had to change the whole name of the company from Perrin et Fils to Family Perrin for the one daughter. I was never told when I started working for them that I had to be nice to the other employees, or it's just very obvious when you work for families like this that it's important that you treat not only the land but the people that work for you and the people around you well and with respect. And it's clear, and it shows throughout the businesses. You look at Robert Haas's last business, Vineyard Brands, and people are retiring after 30 years in that business. That they stay with him, with the company he created. I'm a absolute rarity in Pass Robles. I've been with Tablas since the beginning, so this will be, I think next year will be my 20th harvest with them. And that's a long time for a winemaker. We tend to jump around a lot, but I see no need. I respect what they're doing, and I'm fully behind it.
Okay, so we must have been on a skyscraper elevator. those are wonderful descriptions of your commitment to sustainability. I was thinking one short version I heard, if you're trying to repeat this back, is generational farming and winemaking. And I think that captures really what you all described so well. So thank you. Water is obviously such a critical sustainability issue in California in particular. And as we heard this year, we were blessed with some rain, especially in some regions. So that was extremely helpful. But of course, regardless of the drought conditions, water is always going to be a precious natural resource in our state. And so well before the drought and long after, our California vintners and growers are really focusing on how they can be as water efficient as possible. And we do a sustainability report where we aggregate information where people are using the code of sustainable wine growing to self-assess their operations. And of all the respondents, about 85% of them are using drip irrigation, very targeted way of delivering water. And it applies to about 90% of the vineyards that are included in our program. So just to give you an idea of how vast that this is being applied throughout the industry. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about this with you all. I know Halter Ranch conserves water, and I remember reading in the Green Medal that it resulted in over a 50% reduction in irrigation water, and also capturing rain and winery water and bringing over 2 million gallons back to irrigation ponds. So I would love to hear a little bit about how you do that. That's an incredible accomplishment.
So we're fortunate enough to be able to utilize some new technologies. There are always new companies, and we're finding actually a huge influx of tech companies coming into the ag sector, which is really exciting because you get new ideas, fresh thinking. And there are different ways to monitor your water use via soil sensors, or you can actually monitor what the plant's doing, and you can monitor by tracking humidity pockets above the vines to actually see how much transpiration or how much the vines are breathing is one of the newest technologies. You can also track the sap flow through a vine, and they're highly technical devices, but you can tell down to the gallon how much water your vine is using, and therefore you can dial in how much stress you want to have your vines under. And a little bit of stress is great because it creates more concentrated flavors. Same thing with the backyard tomato grower. You want to stress your tomatoes a little bit to get a little bit more flavor. Same thing in the wine industry. But through these new technologies, we were able to save 54% of our irrigation over the last season. And that was, over 2 million gallons. And then we reclaim all the water that touches the winery roof. That gets directly sent back to our irrigation ponds. And then everything, the gray water in the winery, all the drains from the winery get sent back to a reclamation pond and then redirected to irrigation as well.
Great. And Julian, could you talk a little bit about on the winery side, some of the activities you've done?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing with regard to managing water is you have to measure it first. And, to Lucas's point, you can't manage what you don't measure. And starting in 2008, we really started getting serious about measuring water usage in our winery with a focus on trying to reduce it. And since that time, we've reduced overall water usage across our wineries by over 30%, which in round numbers is about 28 million gallons of water a year, which for those of you who don't speak in millions of gallons, that's about 42 Olympic-sized swimming pools. I think the most important thing that we've done is we've set a price on every gallon of water that we use. Our wineries are in areas that are generally rural areas, so we pull water. We rely on groundwater a lot, and you don't get a bill from Mother Nature for withdrawing groundwater, at least not yet. But it still costs money to use. It costs money in terms of electricity to pump it out of the ground. It costs money to treat, to bring it to a point where it's potable. It costs money to move it around the winery. It costs money if you need to heat it up with a boiler. And at the end of the day, before it goes back into your irrigation ponds for reuse, it costs money to aerate. So we track that, and we figured out that it costs us about 3 cents for every gallon of water that we used. And that essentially enables me to make a financial justification to our CFO if I want to save water. So essentially every million gallons of water that we save is worth $30,000. And now I can start generating, payback propositions, and everybody likes a payback. So, the great thing about working for a family-owned wine company is that the family is really committed to being around for future generations, but that doesn't mean that it comes, at the cost of good business. So, what this, setting a price to water has allowed us to do is to invest in infrastructure. Some of the technologies that we're looking on the winery side are waterless tank sanitation. We use UV lights to sanitize our tank as opposed to using a water-based solution to sanitize our tank. That saves over 450 gallons of water for each tank that we sanitize. We capture rainwater as well on our roofs. And before we put it into our irrigation ponds, we actually run it through our cooling towers because the water and cooling towers, essentially, they run the refrigeration load for our barrel halls to keep our wineries cool. That water doesn't have to be drinking quality water. You can use treated rainwater. So looking at that, also using that water for cellar washdowns, anything that doesn't touch the winemaking process. We've got a barrel wash line that, that recycles water now up to three times. So as the barrels kind of move from left to right on the barrel line, the water goes from right to left, and the cleanest water hits the cleanest barrel and gets recycled through a sump. And that saves not just water, but also also embodied energy. So looking at various different technologies and being able to justify them from a capital perspective is really important. But then also just making sure that that everybody's on the same page, everybody working in the wineries understands the importance of saving water, and that, that that's communicated appropriately in English and in Spanish. During harvest is a really important time, because we actually use over 50% of our water on an annual basis in a 2.5 month period, and a lot of the people working in our wineries are temporary employees during the harvest when we staff up. And if those people don't understand the importance of saving water, then it's a lot harder to do that. So we really rely on a lot of our full-time employees to really to be the leaders, to set the example, to share best practices, and really push forward from that regard.
Thanks, Julian. And that's such a great example of how there are these multiple benefits and the way that there's such an integration between environmental issues, social issues within all of these practices. And Neil, you deal with both the vineyard and the winery side, so I'm curious if you have anything to add, and also this linkage between water and energy. Have you looked at that at all?
Well, clearly, we're a lot smaller scale. I don't have any cooling towers to cool at Talbot's Creek, but it's a very important thing to us, apart from anything else, because we don't really have very much water. We only have what we can pull out of the ground. We only have 120 acres. The vineyard itself was planted with the intent of being dry farmed, as in not irrigated, with drip irrigation in place. As I've discovered, that was a bit optimistic. The vineyard was planted at too tight a spacing to be able to achieve that. However, we only have enough water on the property to irrigate very, very minimally, just about enough to keep things moving. So it's not a huge... I don't spend a huge amount of time monitoring it, because I'm just trying to get enough water to the vines to keep them alive, basically. Everything we've planted in the last 12 years has been true 100% dry farm, so that there is no irrigation. We hand water them in for the first year, maybe 2 years, and then they're completely on their own. So that achieves a couple of goals. Firstly, it achieves we don't use any water. Secondly, it achieves the ultimate goal of Tablas Creek, which is to create wines that are expressions of that piece of land. So the minimal input from us, the better. So we use a lot of water in the vineyard, but we couldn't use any less, and we couldn't use any more because we don't have it. So it's pretty straightforward for me. And he'd be bored.
I'd find something to do.
In the winery, similar to everybody else, we don't have a collection system off the roof, so I really would like to have that. When the winery was built, we didn't do it, and so now it's a tough one to put into place. We catch what we can. I think the biggest innovation for me in my time there, we've been using the UV light for quite a while, and that's certainly helpful. But moving from water to steam for barrel sanitation moved us from being 13 gallons a minute to 6 gallons an hour. And if you're rinsing a barrel for 15 minutes, that adds up, because now we steam a barrel for 3 minutes, it's 6 gallons a minute. So that was massive. That's the biggest single water saving that I've achieved since I've been there. And agree with the other two that just making sure everyone's on the same page and being cognizant of not using water where you don't have to. We had the cellar t-shirt last year was squeegee, not water. And that's, simple things like that, and make people aware. You got to think about it, because we go through a lot of water. It's, my wife tells me not to leave the tap running when I'm cleaning my teeth, and then I go out and spray water over tanks and equipment all day. It's a whole different level of water usage. So we do as best we can, and we continue to strive to use less and less water every year.
And I love how you used both low-tech and high-tech examples of how you deal with these issues.
This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is a holiday toast to the 2016 California wine harvest. And we have Lucas Pope, who is with Halter Ranch Vineyards, Neil Collins, Tablas Creek Vineyards, Julian Shero, Jackson Family Wines, and our moderator, Allison Jordan, California Sustainable Wine Growing. One of the things that we notice in the environmental community is, of course, very important to everyone in this room and everyone who lives on this earth, and that's the need for water, both for land and for rivers, and that interaction between the land and the rivers is very important because we need both of them. And I also find, Allison, that there is a drama or a tension between how we use our rivers and their water and how we're able to use our land and agriculture, and when we need both of them so well. So it's been very interesting for me to hear what's happening, I'll call it, on land, because we also know that we need to be careful about what happens in our rivers. So, Allison, I'll give it back to you. And in the meantime, I'm going to come around and pick up question cards. So if you have a question, fill it out, and I'll pick it up for our panel.
Thanks so much, Anne. It's actually a great segue because one of the topics I wanted to pick up next was conservation of natural resources. So not only how you manage your vineyards, but how you manage those surrounding properties. And sometimes they do, or they're right next to a river or creek. And so I know that all of your wineries have dedicated some of your land to conservation, to natural habitat and biodiversity. And I would love to hear a little bit about how you're doing that. So maybe we'll start with Halter Ranch, because I know you have set aside quite a bit of land for this purpose.
So Halter Ranch encompasses a little over 2,000 acres of property. We utilize for vineyard operations and for the tasting room and winery about 300 of those 2,000 acres. The rest of it has been left to its natural habitat, oak savanna, and we don't touch it. We occasionally go on hikes. We lead nature walks and bird walks through the areas, but we try and leave it completely untouched. Another portion of the property that we're really proud of are wildlife corridors. It's kind of a concept that you, rather than fence the entire vineyard, because you need to fence your vineyards to keep the deer out. They love grapes. So do the pigs. So do the coyotes, the elk. All the animals love to eat grapes. You've got this green crop growing in an arid environment. So our owner invested very early on in cutting the ranch into smaller portions and fencing them separately so that the wildlife had their natural migratory paths down to the water source, which is Tablas Creek. And he installed 3 miles of extra fencing in order to give the animals direct access through riparian areas and creek beds and whatnot, and not impede their passage and force them to go around 5 to 6 miles. So those are two highlights of how we're trying to be environmentally sustainable.
Great examples. And Neil, I would love to hear how you perceive natural resource conservation and also how that is integrated at all, if you agree with organic farming that you do at Tablas Creek.
Yeah, certainly. We carry out the similar practices. We have animal corridors. The original Tablas Creek property, the 120 acres that has grapevines on it, was already cleared of pretty much all oaks. It was farmland before we got there. So that is what that is. We subsequently bought a contiguous 160-acre parcel, which had about 30 acres that are farmable through walnuts. The rest of it will be left as woodland in the same vein on a smaller scale as Halter, which is great because it means the two neighbors together, the animals can cruise right through down Tablas Creek and through both our properties, which is outstanding. As far as vineyard sustainability, when Tablas Creek moved to town, which was in 1989, I was working at a winery down the street in 91, and when they announced that they were going to farm organically in Paso Robles, I wasn't working for them, didn't really know them at that point, but there's the community in general laughed and thought it was an absurd idea and it wouldn't work. And it has worked. We've been certified since 2003. I've been with them since the early 90s. And there's a lot of other people that have followed suit. And I think the growth in businesses such as what we're here with tonight and our local business, the Central Coast Vineyard team, pushing sustainability. And I think grape growing and winemaking, you know, people so easily forget that the foundation of a great bottle of wine is farming. It just ends up in a glamorous product, not a can of peas. And we, as far as farming organically, it's a little easier with a vineyard than it is at row crops and a lot of other things, I believe, not that I farm those. So it's a bit of a responsibility for us in a way, I think, to lead that style of farming, because we can do it. We are, our margins are a little better, maybe a little looser if we're careful. And I think that's been seen, I think, in agriculture, certainly in the Central Coast. Viticulture is leading the way in organics and biodynamics and sustainability in every way. Tablas Creek, as I said, has been organic pretty much the whole time, certified since 2003. We do a whole number of things, including running. We have sheep and donkeys and alpacas and chickens that run the vineyards to consume weeds and fertilize as they go. We just do everything we can to preserve that land. And the whole focus that we all talk about is, I just hired a guy to be the full-time shepherd, which is great. And I referred to him as a sheep farmer. And he said, his answer was, I'm actually not a sheep farmer. I'm a grass farmer. I'm making better soil. And that's ultimately what we all focus on within the vineyard when you get down to it. We're just trying to make better, healthier soil that will last through the generations. And that's everything that we strive to do. And if we achieve that, the grapevines will follow suit.
Great illustrations. I actually want to turn now to innovation. One of the things that has been so much fun for me in my position is seeing not only individual companies, which these gentlemen all work so hard to strive for sustainability within their own vineyards and wineries, but I get to sort of see the whole, and you think about all of these different efforts, initiatives, ideas that can together really make a difference. And so for me, it's just so much fun to hear all these different stories. And I always think of Jackson Family Wines as one of the innovators. They are always trying new things. And even as an industry, I'm also thinking about there's so much peer-to-peer exchange of information, but also almost a healthy competitiveness over sustainability. So people are trying to get the biggest solar array or the first to do this, or they're going to try this. And I often think Jackson Family Wines likes to be in that mix of trying to always try something new, see if this works. And one of the things that was kept top secret for a while, but they had put on solar arrays in 8 of their wineries, I believe, and then worked with Tesla on how do we store that energy so we can use it when we need it. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about that and any other examples you want to offer on innovation.
Sure. Yeah, that's job security for me. A little over 2 years ago, we started an installation of 6.5 megawatts of on-site solar across 8 wineries in California. And that roughly produces about 9 million kilowatt hours of electricity, which is roughly enough to offset about 1,400 homes of annual electricity usage every year. That covers about 35% of our total winemaking electricity usage. Our goal over the next 5 years is to get to 50%. So there will continue to be an investment in more solar, more energy efficiency. We're looking at right now kind of converting a lot of our winery lighting from T5 and T8 fluorescents, which are very, very efficient bulbs. And we converted those back in 2008, 2009 to fluorescents. And now we're looking to go to LEDs. And do that in a way that we don't have to switch out too much infrastructure. So we're really excited about that, and also just kind of continuing to push that envelope. But so on the heels of the solar rollout, we were approached by Tesla Motors in 2013 when they were kind of starting to figure out that they weren't just a car company; they were actually an energy company and a battery company at that. As they were trying to figure out how they take this you know, world-beating technology and apply it in a stationary setting. So we've been working with them to install over 4 megawatts of on-site energy storage capability across six different wineries in California. And essentially what these batteries do is they're designed to kind of help us offset our energy usage. And energy is very complicated. For those of you who don't work in the field, it's a full-time job for some. And it costs different amounts at different times of the day. And you also get hit with what's known as a demand charge, which has absolutely nothing to do with how much electricity you use over a period of time, but it's how much energy you're using at any point in time. And the electric utilities are increasingly charging higher amounts for these demand charges. And what the batteries allow us to do is to allay demand charges, use kind of set our ceilings so that during peak times, the batteries are kicking on and they're offsetting our energy usage, and then we can kind of transition to using those at night, with the goal of ultimately being able to store electricity that we generate from our solar arrays into the batteries. So at the end of the day, in Julian's perfect world, we could run a winery during the day off of our solar array, and then take any excess generation from that solar system, put it into the battery, and then store it for usage at night, so that we could really run a winery off the grid. That's where we'd like to be. There are a lot of realities that have not allowed us to get there at this point, but we continue to really push that and to do it, as I mentioned at the top, in a cost-effective way. So, you know, with the solar systems, those systems are going to pay for themselves within 6 years, and they'll generate free electricity, you know, for the next 20 to 25 years. It was the best meeting of my professional career to date to kind of present this to our senior executive team. Who looked at it and said, "This sounds great. Where do we sign?" And I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, you can sign right here, and we can do it." So, it's been fun to see that that intersection of sustainability and really good business practices.
Great. And Neil, anything you'd want to add, innovation wise? Lucas, any examples?
I think we're just down the same path again. Tavlis is about, I think, about 80% at this point. Run off of our solar panels. We don't have any facility to store, but that's incredibly interesting, and it's really cool that Jackson family are investing the time and money and researching that. Same thing, lights, we switched to the fluorescent ones. I have motion detectors on all the lights throughout the winery, so if someone's not moving, the lights aren't on, and we will switch to LED when we can justify that expenditure to switch. But same thing on the same path, just trying to make it more and more efficient. We'd like to get up to 100%. We thought the last array would get us there. We just came up a bit short. We've got room for one more go. So ultimately, Tablos will be 100% powered by solar, which is great. And then looking into heating water through solar, et cetera, I think is steps for us in the future.
Great. Anything you'd like to add?
I think one important thing to mention would be how much energy is used heating and cooling buildings. And it's a passive system that we've installed on our winery that at night, it's known as night air cooling. If it's cooler outside than it is inside, it actually, the levers on our roof open and suck air into the winery to help cool the building. And it's extremely energy efficient. And then there may be a few innovations in the vineyards. Weed knives, mechanically taking care of weeds rather than using herbicides. I know Neil, and I'm positive Jackson family, uses different mechanical ways to remove weeds to try and keep chemicals out of our soils. And those are newer innovations, and they're always improving every year.
Very exciting to hear about. So the other piece of the sustainability puzzle that I touched on a little bit earlier are the social aspects. And we have a very generous wine industry that is very involved in their communities, very giving back. You often hear about the big auctions that raise hundreds of thousands of dollars that go directly back to the communities. And there was recently an interesting survey done by Sonoma State University, their Wine Business Institute, and their responses were, I think, somewhere around 97% were from California. But they found that 99% of the wine businesses surveyed significantly engaged in altruistic behavior in their local communities. They were giving to local charities. they donated a median of 150 cases of wine a year. I just thought that was incredible, because often we hear about the big auctions, you forget how often wineries are generous with nonprofit organizations that in turn raise money for those organizations. So I was really excited to read that. And Neil, I know that you're winery has partnered with many community organizations. It was one of the reasons that you all won the community award, from local animal shelters to Boys and Girls Clubs to arts and other institutions in the community. And I would love to hear a little bit about how you engage in some of those philanthropic or other ways that you can contribute and give back.
Yeah, certainly not my area of expertise, but Tablas Creek, we donate to many, many local charities that are always willing to participate, both by donation of product, but I think more importantly by showing up in person to pour and present and be part of the events. And I couldn't name them all, the Mozart Festival and the Performing Arts Center and the Boys and Girls Club, as you mentioned, the food bank, the list goes on and on. Also, within our own business, I think it's a fun thing that we do, and it's for the community and the people that work for us. We raise a lot of lamb, so lamb is available for the employees. We'll give everybody cuts of lamb every year. When the compost is ready, they get to take compost home for their own vegetable gardens. Olive oil is available. We have a vegetable garden farm that during the season, out on the counter in the break room or meeting room, is vegetables. We plant about an acre of a fruit tree every acre these days, a vineyard. All the fruit from that goes to the employees to eat. And so we're giving as much as we can to our employees and to the community. I mean, there's a limit in Paso Robles to how much community you can give to, but we give as much as we can.
Yeah, it's really interesting, though, because a lot of times you are in these very rural communities, and this is the economic
We have about 30,000 people and 300 wineries, so that's there's almost competition to give.
All right, we know who to call. Great. Julian, do you want to talk a little bit about this topic, given how you give in both your employees as well as to the community at large?
Yeah, sure. So we also, as I mentioned, we have vineyards and wineries in six counties in California, as well as up in Oregon, and a few wineries internationally. But overall, we support over 50 different nonprofit, non-governmental organizations, a lot of food banks, as Neil mentioned, and environmental education organizations. And it's just, you know, our founding family is just very passionate about giving back. And it, you know, it starts with them. It's extended out to all of our employees. Just last year, we instituted a new policy that essentially gives every employee 2 days a year of paid time to go out and volunteer in the community with the environment or with the nonprofit of their choice. I say environmental nonprofit because that's what I do. The sustainability team picked up trash along the banks of the Dry Creek outside of Healdsburg, and it's just such a, you know, a rewarding way to spend a day to kind of reengage with your community and be able to give back in that way.
Wonderful. And Lucas?
As Neil stated earlier, it's not my area of expertise on how much donation or what's donated,
but
at the same time, what I have a direct impact on in our community are my field workers and the people I work with every single day. And even if you're not an employee of Halter Ranch and you are a contracted laborer and you are full-time with Halter Ranch, we try and give everyone at least a week of sick time plus 3 weeks of vacation. I try and pay better than most people in the neighborhood, and that all comes back around to happy employees who stick around for longer, who really like what they're doing, and they love where they live, and they build more community, and that's how I can directly impact, or that's what I have a direct impact on with the community.
Fantastic.
This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is a holiday toast to the 2016 California wine harvest. We're certainly learning a lot about what's going on in our wine industry, and it's wonderful. And we have with us Allison Jordan, California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. Excuse me. Gerald Gervero, Julian, I don't know, Julian, why I don't want to say your name first. Julian. Gervero, yeah. Jackson Family Wines, Neil Collins, Tablas Creek Vineyards, Lucas Pope, Halter Ranch Vineyards. We're now at that point in the time in our program tonight for questions. There is one thing I want to have everyone alert to. As you walk out tonight, over on the corner towards the door, you'll find some pamphlets, and they're very informative. So when you walk out and go to wine tasting, look at the pamphlets and pick them up if you'd like to have them. So there we are, Allison, back to you. And the questions.
So we have some fantastic questions from the audience. I will do my best to kind of group them so we can get to as many of them as possible. A couple of them are related to pest management. So one question was what pests are currently problems for you? And the other part of it was about do any of you use mini goats or sheep to keep weeds, grass in control along with, guardian dogs? Interesting.
Yeah, you can go for that one.
For sure?
Yeah. I do. I have sheep. They're not the famous baby doll sheep. They're Dorper sheep, so they're quite small. They're hair sheep, so we don't have to shear them. And they run the vineyards, eat the weeds in the off season. They're in the woodland areas helping with getting weeds down from fire suppression, etc. We don't have guardian dogs. We have guardian donkeys, which do a similar job, but are a little more difficult, let's say. And a llama, too. We have a llama and a couple of alpacas, and it's a really efficient way to keep the weeds down, and they fertilize as they go. So that is a huge thing, and as I mentioned earlier, we just hired a full-time shepherd because I started that program, and then it, you know, at 100 sheep, it got a bit out of my depth, and so I got someone that can do it, and it's intensive grazing. So at the moment, he's moving those sheep every day. So they don't eat it down to nothing. They eat it down thus far and then move to the next piece and move to the next piece. And that has been a great thing with the introduction of this new guy. It's much more efficient. But a great way to keep weeds down. I mean, it'll alleviate a lot of tractor passes for us.
Perfect. And what are the major pests that you're addressing right now? Anyone want to take that one?
Well, for me, they're always the same. It's gophers, squirrels, and leafhoppers as the insect version. And we're organic, so no poisons, or it's all trapping of the squirrels and gophers and soaps and oils and monitoring and beneficial insect releases for the leafhoppers.
I think another key that we all practice are the owl boxes.
Yeah,
for gopher control. Because a family of owls will take out 7 or 8 gophers a night. And trapping is much less efficient. You're talking 7 or 8 per person per day if you're really good at trapping. So by putting out 20 owl boxes, you're much more efficient than trying to trap.
Great examples. So I'm going to take a little bit of liberty here and combine two ideas. One of them is how will climate change affect viticulture? And the other one is an interesting one. It starts with this, which caught my attention. So the ultimate sustainability question is ... basically, is the wine industry the best use of land? And so I think these are some of the trade-offs as a society we have to think about as the climate does change. Farmers are, of course, used to adapting to the natural environment that they're given. And so I have faith that we will be able to continue to adapt and change as the climate changes. But I'm curious what your thoughts are about that question about sort of those trade-offs and also climate change impacts for the industry.
I can start with the climate change question. It's the question of the day, right? We had a reporter ask us that question a couple months ago, so I did a lot of research on the topic and kind of looked back in history with our, you know, looking at the harvest, looking at yields, looking at average start times, looking at a lot of different data points. And from what I saw dating back about 20 odd years, which again is admittedly a pretty small sample size, it's difficult to tell kind of from a statistical analysis perspective. But what we are seeing, and you know, we're all seeing it, is this kind of global weirding, as it were. 2 years ago, I think we had three significant rain events. And, you know, we got a fair amount of rain during those times, but, you know, our infrastructure in California and with regard to water management is to get as much water as quickly as possible out to the ocean so we don't have issues of flooding. When we set out to plant vineyards, what we do first and foremost is make sure that we have adequate water resources. And what that means for us is the planning of vineyard reservoirs that capture runoff from the vineyards. So 2 years ago, after those three significant rain events, and I mean, that was literally all the rain we got, our reservoirs were about 75% full. So we started the growing season way ahead than a lot of the agricultural industry, and that just speaks to really again planning and making sure that you're doing everything that you can to use the resources that we have available to us, because these are uncertain times for sure.
Any other thoughts or reflections? The ultimate sustainability question is maybe one we need to have some wine while we discuss that one. It's a big, you know. Of course, you can have a debate about that.
Yeah, I would think, from my perspective, the ultimate sustainability in farming would be a small biodynamic style farm that practices absolute rotation of animals and crops on the purest of levels and grows food for a small community. I mean, it's not something we can achieve, but in its greatest form, I think that is the ultimate. I mean, for a farmer, if you can achieve that, and there are people that are in this country and around the world, and it's pretty impressive the amount of work people do with that. Not easy for a vineyard, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think to answer that question, you have to look at what the California wine industry generates in terms of revenues and livelihoods and the communities and the people that we support. I mean, I think I can't really answer that question, but I do think that it's, this industry, gives back a lot to the community and generates a lot in terms of support. So I would argue that, that the wine industry is very well positioned to kind of continue forward with sustainability in mind.
This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources of the Merlet Forum. You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Unfortunately, we have reached that point in our program for our last question. And I'd like to ask that question. I was really interested when you mentioned solar. And I'm wondering what your reaction from each of our wonderful speakers up here tonight about the interaction of solar in comparison to our fossil fuels, and what does that hold for us in terms of the road ahead for the environment. So, Allison, I'll start with you.
Well, solar is something that does make a great deal of sense in many wine regions, not all, and it really does depend on your property, but because it can be installed on parking structures, on barrel rooms, on all kinds of different places. And we're in obviously sunny, generally speaking, places where we're growing grapes. So you're seeing a lot of adoption of solar. And I think what Julian talked about a little bit earlier is sort of the holy grail is that idea of storage. How do you store that so you can use it when it's not sunny or when it's the nighttime or when you have other needs? So I think we're getting there. And I think it just continues to grow. Of course, at the statewide level, it does help to have incentives and rebates to help really take care of some of that capital cost up front to make the return on investment make sense. But there are also other types of cost structures now that are financing that are helpful in ensuring the continuation and adoption of solar.
Yeah, I mean, I think just to kind of bring it full circle from a sustainability perspective, what's really unique about the wine industry, and not just the wine industry, but sustainability practitioners in general, is how cooperative it is, and how, you know, we share information very willingly, you know, within our industry and with people from outside of our industry. It's very pre-competitive. Now you get the sales and the marketing people in the room, and that changes a fair amount. But prior to that, when we're talking about how we can all kind of work and develop solutions together, not just as an industry, but as society, there's just so much good work and good thinking going on. So, you know, from our perspective, solar is obviously a huge component of our energy strategy, but you also have to think about natural gas offsets, because that's generally how we heat water. We're looking into different technologies that that actually allow you to capture methane from wastewater and kind of deliver near pipeline quality methane that's kind of flared off of wastewater, and be able to start looking at heating applications through that way. So it's solar is certainly a part of the integrated solution, but I think that moving away from fossil fuels is good for all of us.
I don't have much to add to that. I mean, obviously, our commitment to become 100% run on solar at the winery is proof of our belief that that's the way to go. We're in an extremely sunny spot, and I can imagine no real argument against doing that if you can, particularly with the help that we've been given with the government rebates, etc. That was certainly an incentive that we took and ran. It still cost us a lot of money, but it's, if we're talking about generations and generations, it's the right choice, and we're fully behind it.
So solar for us is still a future. We are looking this spring to install parking for employees with a solar array above it. And then the new shop that we're building up in February should have solar on the roof. But it's still in the future for us, because the building wasn't part of the original plan. So we're retrofitting at this point.
And Allison, what would you like to add?
So I think I covered that, and since we are close to the end, I was going to add a fun question that we could all leave with as we prepare for the holidays. And so I was hoping to ask each of the panelists to tell us what they're planning to enjoy in terms of wine with their friends and family at Thanksgiving or over the holiday season. Julian, want to go? Oh, no, you'll go for
someone
it.
Else's
the
wine would be mine.
Great response.
There's no better time to break out a magnum of some other sustainably farmed wine, I think. Large groups always lead to large consumption, and that usually means a magnum is in order.
I really like rosé during the holiday season, during Thanksgiving in particular. I think it pairs really nicely with turkey. And after a heavy meal, something light and crisp and refreshing is just what the doctor ordered. And beer is also really good.
And for me, it's sparkling wine always. Every day is a celebration.
I think I would go with sparkling wine every time. Thank you, Allison. Well, many thanks to our terrific panel tonight. You've been hearing from the Commonwealth Club of California. And Allison Jordan, who's our California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance, with the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. Julian Chervaux, who is with Jackson Family Wines. Neil Collins with Tablas Creek Vineyards. And Lucas Pope with Halter Ranch Vineyards. So let's give a big hand to our panel tonight. For me personally, this has been a terrific panel and a terrific update. It's always good to hear about what's happening in California with our vineyards and all the things that we face and all the things that we do. So thanks again to all of our panel. And many thanks to the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. They're really important in our lives and really very helpful for all of us. So we really appreciate all of you being here. And many thanks to our wonderful audience here. What good questions tonight. So let's give a hand to our audience here. and our audience on the radio and the internet. Find our programs on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. Click on the website for programs and registrations. Click on watch and listen for Commonwealth Club videos, radio schedules, and subscribe to our weekly free podcasts and program archives. Please join us for our final fall program, December 1st, Resilience, a new documentary about children, hope, research, and the environment from the University of California, San Francisco. James Redford is the director and producer of the new documentary. And now we have one of the best parts of the evening is our wine tasting, and we get to taste the wines that were brought from each of our vineyards, and we're really looking forward to that. That should be a lot of fun. And for those of you who are listening on the radio, be sure and come next year when we have our program next year so we can find out more about what's happening in our very sustainable wine industry. So once again, I want to thank you and thank everyone who's here. This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. Thank you very much again for being with us. This meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California is adjourned. And remember, we are going right out of the door to wine tasting.